Welcome to the latest Clinical Oncology podcast. I'm Saif Ahmed, and today we'll be focusing on a recent addition to the journal, Science in Focus Editorials, and specifically an excellent article explaining the complex interplay between estrogen and progesterone receptor in the context of breast cancer. I'll be speaking to the article's authors, Dr. Jason Carroll and Dr. Richard Baird. But before that, we'll be hearing from our new editorials editor, Dr. Duncan Gilbert. Duncan, thanks for joining us. Can you start things off by telling us a little bit about your background?
Thanks, Dave. I'm a clinical oncologist down in Sussex, and I've recently taken over as editorials editor from Charlotte Coles. I'm interested in academic clinical oncology. I did a PhD at the Institute of Cancer Research, and I now spend a day a week attached to the Medical Research Council's clinical trials unit, looking to design the next phase of clinical trials. I'm particularly interested in education in clinical oncology in the wider sense and how we can use the Clinical Oncology Journal and particularly the editorials to do that.
Can you tell us why Clinical Oncology have started this new series of editorials?
It comes twofold, really. Firstly, for primers for those clinical oncologists who are established and may find a brief update of rapidly progressing areas within clinical oncology helpful. And then secondly, also as an educational resource for trainees, so that hopefully we can pull them all together into a volume of editorials that provide concise, well-written, clinically relevant updates in changing areas of oncology. So, for example, the first article that we commissioned is around the area of immune checkpoint inhibition, written by Tim Illidge, and about basically how we can use combination of radiotherapy and the new immunotherapies and immune modulatory therapies in combination to maximize the effect of both. The second editorial that we commissioned is around improved understanding of the estrogen receptor function, and that's also now online. Further editorials that we've commissioned and that are in a late stage of production include Professor Chalmers looking at PARP inhibitors and other DNA repair targeting agents. We've got Professor Short looking at microRNA biology and the potential for this as biomarkers, particularly in glioma. We've got Professor Melcher giving an introduction on oncolytic virus therapy. And then also from Canada, Professor Bristow looking at hypoxic and genomic signatures predicting radiotherapy responses in prostate cancer. So hopefully all of these topics will give updated information in a concise and informative and interesting manner that should be a good educational resource going forward for the readership. I'd also be very open to other ideas that either trainees or consultants or anyone in the readership of clinical oncology would feel would make good, suitable and interesting areas for future editorials and can be contacted via the editorial office.
Thanks, Duncan. You've told us about a really interesting set of topics that will be covered. How often will we see these Science in Focus editorials in our journal?
Given the production schedule, I'd hope that we'd have one at least every other edition, if not every edition. And then what I'd hope is that after 8 to 10, we'll pull them all together in the online area of clinical oncology as a virtual special edition so that they're all in one place and they can be accessed as an educational resource.
Duncan, thanks very much for that, and we look forward to reading these issues in the future.
Great, thank you.
Next, we're joined by Dr. Jason Carroll and Dr. Richard Baird, who have authored our second Science in Focus editorial, which explores our latest understanding of how the estrogen receptor is working and how this may be important for cancer therapy. Both Jason and Richard are working at the University of Cambridge. Jason is a group leader at the CRUK Cambridge Research Institute, and his lab have in recent years made highly significant advances in our understanding of the estrogen receptor. Richard is an academic consultant, medical oncologist in breast cancer therapeutics, and is leading on a number of exciting early phase clinical trials in that area. Thank you both for joining us.
Jay, prior to your research, what did we understand about the significance of estrogen receptor and progesterone receptor status in breast cancer?
So we know that the bulk of breast cancers are estrogen receptor positive, around about 3/4. And we know that in these cancers, estrogen receptor is a driving transcription factor. It's one of the proteins that sits on the DNA and switches genes on that ultimately culminate in cell cycle division and cancer progression. We've known for a long, long time that progesterone receptor is one of those target genes and has been used on and off over the last decade or two as a marker or a biomarker of whether estrogen receptor is functional or not. And the logic was that if a breast cancer is estrogen receptor positive and progesterone receptor positive, then estrogen receptor is there and it's likely to be doing its job. It's switching genes on and likely contributing to cell growth. And the consequence of that was that women are likely to be responsive to drugs that block estrogen receptor. So really the information we had on estrogen receptor and progesterone receptor was a linear one, where estrogen receptor regulates progesterone receptor, and then PR can function as a biomarker of estrogen receptor activity.
The research that you looked at, what made you question this paradigm?
Well, we went on a bit of a fishing expedition. We were looking for proteins that interacted with estrogen receptor, and mostly because our lab for the last decade has been interested in identifying estrogen receptor-associated proteins. These turn out to be very interesting factors that either assist or inhibit estrogen receptor activity. Some of them are interesting drug targets. So we took an unbiased screening approach to pull out estrogen receptor from breast cancer cells and to see what we found. And we discovered progesterone receptor as a physically interacting protein with estrogen receptor. So these two proteins form a complex.
What's the significance of this complex?
Well, it suggested to us that these two nuclear receptors, which we know are parallel pathways, we know they coexist in many, many breast cancers, might actually function in a slightly more complex role. So rather than a linear regulatory interaction, there might be a functional interaction. Now, what we know is that proteins that are similar to estrogen receptor, they're called nuclear receptors, tend to function in quite similar ways. And progesterone receptor is probably as close to a cousin as you would get to estrogen receptor. They tend to sit on the DNA of the same regions. They tend to share the same proteins that they need for activity. And so when we pulled out progesterone receptor as an estrogen receptor interacting protein, this implied to us that there was likely to be some crosstalk. So progesterone receptor was likely to be contributing to estrogen receptor activity and that we could potentially exploit that therapeutically.
Transcription factors is clearly a very complicated area. Can you tell us a little bit more about how they work? Because it's not as simple as just estrogen receptor binds to the DNA and it affects those genes in that area.
Yeah, absolutely. That was the paradigm not that long ago, about 15 years ago, that estrogen receptor would get stimulated with estrogen and it would sit on the DNA and switch its target genes on. But of course, we know that's not the case anymore. And mostly our understanding has come from our ability to study the human genome. So by being able to look on a genomic level, we can now start to identify how does estrogen receptor interact with the DNA and where does it interact. And it turns out to be much more complex than we originally thought. So estrogen receptor needs a number of proteins to be able to reside on the DNA and be stable and to be able to switch genes on. And a complicating factor is that these sites where estrogen receptor occupies tend to not be near the genes that it regulates. So it will sit in regions in the genome and then regulate genes from quite significant distances. And this is something we're really just starting to piece together now. So what DNA interaction site goes with what gene? And we're starting to get a handle on that. But again, that comes down to our ability to study the genome in a user-friendly and tangible way.
And you showed that estrogen receptor and progesterone receptor seem to combine in some way. What were you able to find out about why they combine and what effect that has?
Yeah, so it looks like progesterone receptor has the ability to physically interact with estrogen receptor, which we knew from our screening experiments. But it looks like progesterone receptor can function to sequester estrogen receptor away from one set of sites in the DNA to a different set of sites in the DNA. And so essentially, if a breast cancer cell is exposed to progesterone or a synthetic version of progesterone, the progesterone receptor will move to the DNA and it will make stable connection with the DNA. But it can then function to pull estrogen receptor away from what it's typically doing to these new sites where it's less functional. So essentially, progesterone receptor works like almost like a molecular sink or a molecular handbrake, if you will, to stop estrogen receptor from doing its job, which is switching on the genes that contribute to cell division.
Clearly, again, a very complex area. What kind of research tools did you use to try and decipher this?
Yeah, so a lot of what we call omic tools. So it's the ability to study genome-wide DNA interactions. And there's a particular technique we use called chip sequencing, which is a method that allows us to map in an unbiased manner where a protein of interest sits in the genome. And this is not as trivial as it sounds because the genome, of course, is 3 billion nucleotides in length. And we know that there are tens of thousands of protein interaction sites across that genome. And as I said, they tend to be in regions that we never would have guessed. They're in the middle of nowhere. So chip sequencing, which is a method of pulling out a protein and sequencing the associated DNA, was absolutely critical. We discovered the interaction through proteomic analysis, so another omic tool where we were looking for protein-protein interactions in an unbiased fashion using mass spectrometry as an endpoint. And then, of course, we would couple that with another omic endpoint, which was transcriptomics, which was our ability to look at all of the genes that are regulated in an experimental condition. And when we pull all of these together and ask the right questions in the right hormonal milieu, we can identify the proteins that interact, where they go on the genome, where they move around the genome, and then what the consequences of those events are as far as the genes that are switched on or switched off.
And you've published some of your work on this. Where next in terms of the research questions you want to ask?
The initial findings were really exciting for us, and they've given us the impetus to pursue this in much greater detail. Of course, the clinical trial, which Richard and myself have been talking about for a while now. One thing that we've noticed is that the field is it's a very old field. There's a lot of literature around hormone signaling, and there are a lot of complexities. And so what we're finding we're having to do, we are interested by this, of course, is trying to fill in some of the gaps between the existing paradigms and what we think might actually be happening, and trying to explain some of the complexities and some of the paradoxes in the field. So an example is the observation that both progesterone agonists and antagonists can have efficacy. And it seems like a paradox, but actually our preliminary data would suggest they do the same thing to estrogen receptor. They can both function in the same way. They can elicit this molecular sync mechanism. So we're following that up. We are looking at the different progesterone receptor compounds. So we know some of these compounds go into healthy women in the form of HRT. We know some of these compounds are used for the treatment of cancer patients. And we're not quite sure how different the different progesterone receptor drugs will be, but that's something that we're trying to figure out. So we're really filling in some of the gaps, but really trying to take it to the next level. And that, for us, means trying to couple the new information, so the concept of using a progesterone receptor chemical, but in combination with the existing compounds that we have, with an estrogen receptor antagonist, and really trying to figure out how do they cooperate, what are the mechanisms that allow these two compounds to have an additive effect, and how can we best exploit that?
You talked about the importance of transcription factors and how they may be exploited in cancer therapy. Is it just limited to estrogen receptor, or are there any other cancers where that might be significant?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're mostly focused on hormone-dependent cancers, and there in breast it is mostly estrogen receptor with the help of a number of associated proteins, some of which we think might be drug targets. In prostate cancer, it's mostly androgen receptor, but again, androgen receptor doesn't work alone. It uses associated proteins, and some of these, of course, might also be therapeutic targets. But we know in almost any cancer, almost any ailment, the fact that the cell has to respond to stimuli means that transcription factors are involved. Because whether a gene gets switched on or switched off, which ultimately determines the fate of that cell, is determined by the transcription factors. So it's really trying to identify in whatever disease you're interested in our case, it's cancer, specifically hormone-dependent cancers, what are the key transcription factors? Because there will always be a transcription factor involved. And then how can we manipulate them and learn a little bit about the biology?
At this point, Richard, I just wanted to bring you in on the clinical significance of these findings. So can you tell us a bit more, again, about the background of why estrogen receptor and progesterone receptor are so important in breast cancer and what this research has told us?
So the preclinical findings which Jay and his team have come up with have great potential clinical significance, because what we knew beforehand, as Jay outlined, was that out of patients who have ER-positive breast cancers, there's a difference in the clinical outcomes for those patients. There's great heterogeneity. And one of the biomarkers of that was whether or not your tumour was either progesterone receptor positive or negative. So generally, patients who are ER-positive, PR-positive, had a better clinical outcome than ER-positive, PR-negative patients. And as Jay explained at the beginning, it had been thought that PR status was a passive consequence of having a functional estrogen receptor. So if you were ER positive and that was working and active, you would also be PR positive as a passive consequence of that. But Jay's preclinical work, to some extent, potentially turns that on its head, because actually, if you can modulate PR activity, you might affect the response to anti-estrogens. And so that's the really exciting thing. And in the clinic, although for some of our patients with ER-positive breast cancer, the clinical outcomes are good, many patients unfortunately relapse, develop metastatic disease and die. So there is an urgent need for better therapeutic approaches for patients with ER-positive cancers.
And taking what we've learned forward then, what kind of trials might this influence?
So I think the really exciting things from the clinical perspective are that if Jay's team's preclinical data holds true in the clinic, then a combination, for example, of a progesterone receptor agonist with an anti-estrogen might improve the efficacy of an anti-estrogen, just primarily. The other aspect to this, which is very important to pull out, is there's quite a literature out there in support of the use of progesterone receptor agonists like Megase, for example, in low doses being used to treat things like hot flushes, which are a really debilitating side effect for many patients who are taking antiestrogens. So whilst primarily adding a PR agonist to an antiestrogen might make it work better, actually it may also help alleviate some of the side effects from antiestrogens. And a lot of treatments like aromatase inhibitors or tamoxifen are being given for increasing lengths of time in the adjuvant setting, for 5, sometimes 10 years. And so there's a lot of morbidity out there which actually low-dose Megase, for example, could potentially help alleviate. And actually, unfortunately, some patients who are on antiestrogens actually stop treatment because of those side effects. And we know that the outcome of those patients who stop treatments can be a lot worse.
Talking about PR agonists, we've already used them in the clinic. Are they associated with any particular side effects?
You're right, they are already used actually in many oncology practices. They tend to be used, for example, drugs like Megase can be used at relatively high doses, for example, 160 milligrams a day, and can be associated with some weight gain. There is a small incidence of thromboembolism with these drugs, and there are other potential adverse events, so they're not without side effects. So I think in the initial clinical testing of these preclinical results, we're very keen to try and identify what the right dose of the progesterone agonists might be optimal to use in combination with antiestrogens. And I think in the first instance, we're also keen, perhaps in the preoperative setting, to confirm the anti-proliferative effects of such a manoeuvre.
How might you be doing that?
One of the trials that's currently in development, called the Pioneer Trial, for which we're currently working on setting up, is a 2-week preoperative study in patients with early breast cancer, where we would be comparing patients who just take letrozole for 2 weeks with patients who in the experimental arm would take letrozole in combination with the PR agonist Megase. And actually we would have 2 arms of that, a low-dose arm and a high-dose arm. And the primary endpoint for this trial is planned to look at proliferation after 2 weeks of treatment. So the question we're asking is, does the addition of the Megase further enhance the anti-proliferative effects of letrozole? And I think that's very important to know. And also, for example, if we did discover that low-dose Megase might be biologically sufficient, if you like, compared with high-dose Megase, so it still had an anti-proliferative effect, that would be important, because I think if it's possible that in future trials to use a slightly lower dose of these drugs, that might have a better therapeutic index.
And Jay, I just want to bring you in on this, because there's a lot of talk about translational trials and work like that. You work in a very basic science lab, but hearing from Richard about the Pioneer study, are studies like that and other studies then being brought back to labs like yourself, and are you able to learn from clinical trials?
100%, absolutely. So one of the endpoints that of this trial is to get samples after the 2-week treatment so that we can do our genomic analyses on. We would be very interested in trying to map estrogen receptor DNA interaction sites in the cancers from women that received the Megase in combination with the aromatase inhibitor, essentially to add weight to our evolving hypothesis that this approach is a worthy pursuit and worth considering. And of course, it will reveal new insight, which we can then take back to the lab to ask the next set of questions. So one of the advances in our field, or one of the recent discoveries, is the observation that the estrogen receptor itself gets mutated quite frequently in cancer. And this is something that people have looked at for a number of years, and nobody really saw anything. And it was mostly because we were looking in the wrong context. People were sequencing the primary breast cancer. We know if you look in the metastatic context, the estrogen receptor is very frequently mutated. The mutations occur in a very predictable part of the protein. They tend to be 1 of 3 amino acids, and they render the protein resistant to estrogen receptor targeted chemicals, including drugs. So if we can get positive insight and positive results from this clinical trial, we'll think about going back and assessing the potential of using a progesterone receptor drug in contexts where we know estrogen receptor is mutated, where we know the drugs that target estrogen receptor are unlikely to work, or may get more potent in combination with another targeted agent such as a progesterone receptor agonist.
Well, Jason and Richard, thanks for sharing such an exciting area of research at the moment.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.